painting to photography, from beadwork to woodworking. KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University presents Artbeat. Artbeat highlights the work and accomplishments of local artists from in and around Winona. Support for Artbeat is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Now, here's Terry Tenseth with today's Artbeat.
On this episode of Artbeat, we visit with an actor who is new to Great River Shakespeare Festival this year. This individual spent over 2 years on Broadway in what is arguably one of the most popular musicals of all time. This summer, he performs on the campus of Winona State University in two different productions during season 12 of the festival. Today, he visits with us about his career, hard lessons learned, and what it's like having a spouse not just as a fellow actor, but sometimes as your director. I'm Terry Tenseth, and you're listening to Artbeat. Good afternoon. We have an acting member of Great River Shakespeare Festival with us because this is a great time of year where you guys come in and you take over the town, you paint it red, and then you leave us crying for more.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Yes.
So is this your first year with Great River Shakespeare Festival, Jim Poulos?
Yes, it is. This is my first season as a company member. I have visited on two occasions, maybe three, but two because my wife, Melissa Rain Anderson, directed The Fantastics, mm-hmm. I think in 2011, and the complete works of Shakespeare Abridged in 2012. So I came to visit on both of those occasions, but also I joined the cast of The Comedy of Errors when they took the show to the Rep Theater of St. Louis. You know, I acted on stage with the company then, and really, Paul, Tara, Michael Fitzpatrick, Jim Edmondson, Chris Mixon are all people that I have worked with since 1992.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this is like a family reunion.
A bit, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Leslie Brott and I crossed paths along the way. This all kind of stems back to PCPA Theater Fest in California. Tara Flanagan and I and Melissa were actually all roommates at PCPA for maybe a year. So, you know, lots of old friends, and we've kept in touch over the years. And I've worked with Paul Barnes a couple of times at Rep Theater of St. Louis. We did Amadeus together as well, and then took that to the Jiva Theater Center later. Yeah.
That seems like that would be a great show.
It's a great show. And it was a great combination of, you know, the really, really good people and Paul at the helm. And it was a good production.
Great.
Yeah.
So when did acting start for you?
Well, that's a good question. I mean,
versus acting up.
Yeah. Versus acting up, which started when I left the womb. Yes. My godmother, Emily Gates, put me in a musical when I was 9. I was one of the boys who was married off to the youngest of Tevye's daughters in Fiddler on the Roof in the Samarin High School production. So that's what got me on stage. And my godmother is a music teacher. She was my music teacher throughout my high school years. So she kept, you know, kind of encouraging me in that direction, as did my parents, who, you know, my mom is a very public person. She's a leadership trainer. And so she does a lot of speaking. My dad's a salesman.
They're on
sales
stage
manager.
All the time.
They're on stage all the time. Okay. Exactly. But I think I got into it primarily via music and then caught the bug of, you know, the kind of craft of acting in high school. And it wasn't until my junior year in high school that Emily Gates, who was my godmother and music teacher at the time, she sat me down and said, you know, this is something I think you should consider. Because that was, you know, that time when you're trying to figure out what's next, where am I going to go to college and all that. So I think it really took that kind of, I'm sort of the guy who needs to have a little push in the right direction. I don't think I've ever necessarily been a guy who just kind of like takes the leadership position necessarily. I'm usually a really good foot soldier.
Now, you're originally from California.
Yes. Grew up, born and raised. I mean, there was a short time period where my parents were in Atlanta and then Chicago. But by the time I was, you know, 3 years old, we were back in California.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where did you go to college then?
Well, I went to the Pacific Conservatory for the Performing Arts, which is otherwise known as PCPA or PCPA Theater Fest, because it was also a professional theater company year round. And that's where I met Paul. Paul was the head of the conservatory. Rick Barber was my okay. second year acting teacher and also a fellow actor. Like we did Love's Labor's Lost together the summer after I graduated. And as did Melissa, my wife, who was an actress too. So that was my training, and it was based in sort of like a grab bag of contemporary acting techniques mixed with some very, really, really very solid Shakespeare classical training. Their philosophy was you're going to end up working when you get out of school at a Shakespeare festival or in the chorus of a musical. And so you need to have those skill sets, you know, to get going. And all those served me really well. And I understudied the actors who were at the company. Greg Coffin was an actor that I often understudied and learned a lot from him as well. So I picked up stuff from classwork, but I also picked up a lot from watching people rehearse and sort of assimilating what the choices that they made into my own, you know, person. And so you sort of get the craft handed down to you, and then you have to decide what you're going to do with it.
And once you graduated, what was your first step? And
well, I was a non-equity, we call it gypsy actor in California with Melissa and I. So Melissa and I started our relationship in 1992, and we were living together by then. We would basically just travel from job to job, and in between jobs, we would stay with either her parents or my parents. And after 5 years of doing that in California, I went to an open call in Los Angeles, California for the musical Rent, which at the time had recently opened on Broadway, and they needed a 2-month temporary swing because they were running thin due to either illness or vacation, or people had movies that they were doing. So they just needed to get stuff covered for a couple of months. So it was a very kind of whirlwind lucky get. I mean, wow. I went to an open call. A week later, they flew me to New York. I was on a temporary contract. I didn't rehearse really for a week except for a musical rehearsal. I, you know, sat in the balcony and wrote down my blocking for the tracks that I would, you know, possibly be on for. And a week later, they called me at 6 o'clock on a Tuesday and said, "You're on tonight. You better come in and let's talk through the blocking." So we talked through the blocking, and they threw some clothes on me, and I ended up playing that ensemble part of Gordon and Others for 2 weeks straight because Mark Setlock, who was playing the role at the time, was on for Angel for all those 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, and then I had a week off, and then Norbert Leo Butts, who was playing the squeegee guy at the time, was stepping into the role of Roger because Adam Pascal was leaving. And so I stepped into the role of the squeegee guy and ended up playing that role until the end of the year. So, I started in October and I was the squeegee guy, you know, on a chorus contract in a Broadway show in less than a month. And I started as a 2-month temporary replacement, you know, and then 2 months later, I think it was, you know, basically officially by the end of January, I was playing Mark Cohen, who's the other male lead in the show. I mean, well, there's a lot of leads in the show, but he's the filmmaker and the narrator of the show. And I played that for about two and a half years.
Who knew that something so temporary would become?
Well, like... it was, you know, it really was like hitting the lottery.
Right.
And the idea of going to New York was something we had in our head and we had considered. And then honestly, it was just something like, we just don't have the finances to move to New York right now, you know? So it was going to be like a maybe later thing. And so this really, it was like, let's do this. Let's just take a chance. You know, we've got 2 months to, with a production contract, let's go to New York and see if this is something we can actually do. And then of course it turned into something else.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is lucky.
Yeah.
But it also means you're talented. So otherwise you wouldn't be sitting here in this station right now talking to me.
Absolutely, yeah. So, well, thank you.
So what else has that led to for you?
Well, the project I did after that was called The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, which was an original musical based on, obviously, the Mark Twain novel. And I played Huckleberry Finn in that. And the music was by a guy named Don Schlitz, who wrote his most famous song is called Kenny Rogers the Gambler. But he was a Nashville, you know, very well-known Nashville writer, and he had a great score. And Paul Gemignani, who was, you know, a legend in our business, really one of my favorite musical directors ever. He was the music supervisor, and he was the music director, but he was also more of like a music constructor, you know, because Don wasn't a musical theater guy, so they needed an expert to kind of get his music in line with, you know, the storytelling they needed to do. And then Scott Ellis, who is also just like killing it right now and had at once like three Broadway shows up in the open at the same time this season. He was at the helm, and David Marquez was the choreographer, and we all really believed and loved the show, but it wasn't perfect, and it failed, you know, on a business level. It ran for 3 weeks and it was done.
It happens.
It does. That's part of the deal, you know, but it always kind of sticks in your craw, I think. You know, there are probably plenty of people in New York who do enough of these things. There are certain actors who go through from show to show to show. And I think probably after you get a lot of those under your belt, maybe it doesn't stay with you quite as much. But that was my chance to kind of break out in an original role. And I think because it ran, whatever, I don't know how to interpret all that, but that, you know, because it closed so quickly, you know, ultimately from a business level, that was a lot of people that didn't get a chance to see me do my thing. You know, I spent the first 3 years, let's say, of my life in New York City in, like, you know, arguably the most popular show in a long time.
Right.
You know, Lion King was certainly there and starting to become what it is, the monster that it is. Rent was really special because it crossed a lot of cultural borders, as far as like, it wasn't just a theater show. It was, you know, people who didn't necessarily go to theater were also really jazzed up about the subject matter and about the music. And then to go from that to The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, where it was like up and down, that was like my New York theater education, that you can be at one point at the highest high and then at one point just knocking on doors and pounding the pavement again.
Lessons learned.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I did. And then I've done a couple of national tours, and I've done some off-Broadway productions. I had the chance to work with Hal Prince and Susan Stroman on a show at the Meunier Chocolate Factory. Melissa was there as well as one of Hal Prince's associates or assistants. And then also, because I stayed in touch with Paul and stayed in touch with those, my kind of home base in the regional theater, I have a place in Rochester, New York, called the Jiva Theater Center. And Melissa and I have had a really tight connection with them for a long time. You know, when I can't work in New York for whatever, however we want to say it, either for love or for the high profile projects, I can often work here at Great River or at the Jiva Theater Center and do work that I love with people I love as well.
Let's get into how you kind of go through your creative process then. So you're given a role.
Yeah.
Right. And are you in two plays this season or?
I am in two. Yeah. I'm in Much Ado About Nothing as Conrad, who's part of the trio that hangs out, you know, myself, John Maltese, and Robert. We were like the villainous trio.
Gotcha. And then you're in Romeo and Juliet.
And in Romeo and Juliet as Mercutio. Yeah.
Right. For example, how do you go ahead and approach a role? What's your way of doing it? Everybody's got their own thing.
Yeah. I take it sort of project by project. And also, it also depends on how much time I have, you know, going into a project. As a general rule, I read the play 3 times and I try to stay away from making choices like, how would I play the part? How would I play the part? I try to just kind of take it in as it is. And then I kind of identify initial impulses I have about it, what the play is saying, or how maybe an image that really stuck with me, but I want to hold on to those first impressions as much as I can to sort of like jump to as a launching off point for like the next step, which would be, now I have to look and see, who is this person and what is he after? What are his hopes and dreams? What are, you know, things, these are questions there's other technical ways I could say these things, but ultimately you're asking, you know, what defines this person at its core, you know, would be a good place to start. Some people call it the spine of the character. Some people call it the through line of the character or the super objective of the character. I mean, there's been so many different ways of saying it throughout the years. I read the play a lot. That's sort of my mantra. I think I really believe that most everything you need to know, and there are exceptions, but really if you really dig in and you really look at it, everything you need to know is already in the script. And you can go to outside stuff to help like fill that in if that's useful to you. But I think ultimately what you're doing by going to outside stuff and then returning to the script, or like sometimes an actor will look at everything the playwright says about the character and look at everything, not the playwright, let's say like the other characters say about my character. And then you would look at, all the things that my character says about himself. But really what that's doing, just the simple process of going through all that, it's just making me read the script again. Rick Barber and I were talking yesterday, you know, about how it's an amazing feeling when you, as an actor, can kind of see the field like an athlete, you know, like you see all of the moving parts around you and you know what your function is inside that. And I think that reading the play and keep going back to the play and resisting imposing things until you really understand exactly what you're saying and why you're saying it can be useful. And ultimately, all of that is to get to a place of relaxation, because 90% of the job is really in the director's hands to cast the right people. And if I'm relaxed and I understand what I'm saying, who I'm saying it to, and why I'm saying it, ultimately, that's a character, because they cast me to bring whatever those tools are that come with me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is a rep company, so it's important to identify the pieces of yourself that really do fit the character and then get rid of the things that don't and maybe not repeat. Then you use your imagination. Then you can start to create externals and things like that that will help differentiate my performance as Mercutio from my performance as Conrad. But I think if you strip away those technical aspects that you do to make things different from another, on the inside of it, the process is basically the same.
Well, and then you got to be careful too, because you might overprocess and then the director wants to go in a completely different direction for your character.
Well, sure. Yeah. And yeah. No doubt about that. I think that's why it's so important, because to stick to, you know, what the playwright has put out there, you know, because understanding what you're saying is non-negotiable. Like there isn't a director in the world who, so knowing what you're saying is one thing, deciding what subtext may be going on there or why you're saying it, that's part of the rehearsal process.
So is stage your primary thing? Are you doing any film?
Stage is definitely my primary thing. And I had, you know, I've done a lot of musicals when I was younger, if for any other reason than that was I could do them. And that, as a general rule, is going to be a more profitable job for an actor. Not always. But then when you compare it to TV and film, obviously that's going to be a more profitable job for an actor. My wife, Melissa, has gotten to do some really good TV stuff.
Lipstick Jungle.
Absolutely.
Saw the episode.
Absolutely, yeah. Yep. And she also did a great Law & Order Special Victims Unit, which was really excellent. So, you know, when I was in a show in New York, there was a lot of interest in me for film and TV. But I also had a very extreme look. I had a really bleach blonde hair. So at the time, it was a difficult sell for casting directors. Now it may not be so much. Not sure. So that's also part of that business thing. It's like
making a decision.
But also when you're busy, 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 and in front of people, that's often when these things are going to come your way.
Mm-hmm.
And I just do a lot of work out of town because, well, for one, I need to pay the bills, but also the material is amazing. You know, like the material you generally get to work on here at Great River, or when I work at Jiva or other places, is Rep Theater St. Louis. You're working on pretty astonishing material. And when you're working in New York, you're working on material that could be astonishing.
But you don't know.
But you don't know yet.
Hence the Tom Sawyer incident.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And that's cool. I want to be a part of that process too. But so it's always a give and take. And I want to do film and TV, absolutely. But you know, I'm still wrestling with that equation of, you know, how do I keep my life in a place, in one place, and still be able to pay the rent?
Right.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to pay the rent.
Everybody's got to pay that rent.
For you, have there been any moments on stage where you've been like, oh my God? And how do you recover from that moment?
Oh my God, let's
say something happened that wasn't supposed
something
to happen.
Went up or
yeah.
Gosh, I think I used to have stories like that, and now my brain is freezing. I think, I mean, there when I was, so I had done Rent for so long, it was almost 3 years of my time. And there was a place when I had walked out on stage to do the opening monologue. And the whole cast is out there. We all walk out together. I set up a camera and a tripod. I turn the camera to the cast who's behind me. I look at them all. And then I look out at the audience and I start the monologue. We begin on Christmas Eve with me, Mark, and my roommate, Roger. We live in an industrial loft on the top floor of what was once something that goes in that nature, right? on the corner of 11th Street and Avenue B. That's what it was. And I walked out. Cast walked out with me. I set the tripod up, put the camera in the tripod. I turned it to the cast, looked at the cast, turned out to the audience. And I said, we begin on Christmas Eve with me, Mark, and my roommate, Roger. We live in... Just one second. And then I picked everything back up. And I walked off stage left, leaving the cast on stage.
Oh my God.
Because I knew I wasn't going to be able to complete the show, to get my lines out if I didn't start with my action. So that was one of those... So then I walked back out, did the whole process again, and we continued the show, which is, I don't know, I'll probably never work again for saying that on radio. So there it was. Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah, it happened. It happened to me. And I think I was in well into my second year, maybe even into the beginning of the third.
Do you think that happens more with shows that have a long run?
Yes, I do. I think the other types of things that happen in shorter runs are just due to, you know, rehearsal times are really crunched now. So a lot of times things that happen there are more about, you know, like we had a set mishap with Romeo and Juliet on opening night. A gate like came off its hinges.
You got to roll with it.
You just got to roll with it, you know, and it's live theater. And you know, Michael and Caroline dealt with it really well. And you have to acknowledge those kind of things on some level, because you can't pretend those things don't happen. The audience is there. They know they happen. Oftentimes it can present a really exciting singular moment that just you and that audience that night can share, which is on one level, something that only live theater will provide, you know? Yeah. We're trying to make those kind of things happen, you know, in the context of the story.
You should make it work around it. If you
that's
can
right.
add like around it, that's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
If it works. Yeah. What are some of your challenges with your roles this year or this season?
Well, with Conrad and Much Ado About Nothing, it was there's not a lot of text to work with for that character. And so it was about being really specific about what the relationships were between our trio, what our status was in the community that we were, hanging out with, and in Messina, you know, where do we stand in the world of Messina? And then whether or not being just specific about whether I was successful and, you know, in the goal to, you know, gain status. And I think, you know, we decided that Conrad was a climber of some kind and probably chose wrong and is now stuck with somebody who is always looking for trouble. The truth is he's presented an opportunity at the top of the play where Don John could really just kind of play nice and, you know, kiss some butt with Don Pedro and we'd all be better for it, you know? But of course he doesn't, and I'm stuck with being his henchman. So it was about making relationships specific and without having a lot of language, and then being able to let the scene kind of breathe through that. With Mercutio, that's one of those roles where you kind of take the leash off an actor and let him, you know, throw as many darts as possible, see what sticks. And then because there's so much sexual innuendo in the language, it's some double, triple, quadruple entendre sometimes. It's extremely dense, is dense the right word? It's just, it's complicated. You know, we're talking about really naughty things in a way that no audience in contemporary society would necessarily pick up on it.
So you almost have to make it kind of...
Well, that was the challenge. It was like, what are the moments where we need to, you know, physicalize things so that the audience understands that this isn't just a conversation about a shoe or, you know...
Right. Wink, wink.
Exactly.
Right.
But also, you can't just keep going to the same place, or else the audience is like, I get it. You know, so it was that balance. How far do you go? When do you do it? You know, how do you keep the adults on board with the sexual innuendo without, you know, having them run out of the theater with their 6-year-old?
Right.
As well. You know, so it was sort of like a Warner Brothers cartoon on that front, where there's so much adult humor going on in those Warner Brothers cartoons that goes right over the kids' heads.
But if you watch it now, you're like,
oh my gosh, I can't believe how much.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So that was one of the challenges. The other challenge was we wanted to make Mercutio, Doug and I, when I say we, dangerous. So how do you make a guy kind of a little unstable, has a little potential to go off the rails, but still keep him part of a friendship with Romeo and Benvolio, you know, because it's important that those two, that they all love each other on some level or need each other on some level, so that when Mercutio does, you know, get the worst end of it, the worst end of fate, I guess, when he gets stabbed under Romeo's arm, that it has to mean something to Romeo. It has to be enough for him to, you know, launch into the next phase of the story, which really is the catalyst for the rest of, for the tragedy of the piece. So the mantra for Doug has always been, it's a party until it's not. And that's when it's not, you know, that's the first time it's not. And it's a big one. And it's what launches what was seemingly a romantic comedy up until that point into a tragedy. It's exciting because when I do get to play these roles where they sort of drive scenes or are there to affect other people, you know, to incite them in some way or cause a stir or to, you know, be a truth teller. These are fun things to do because there's usually no filter on these kind of characters.
It's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you get to experience a whole other life then.
Yeah. Absolutely. And we play with some ideas that we think this guy Mercutio has been to war.
Right.
He understands what that is, and probably Romeo and Benvolio have not.
That's something a lot of people don't understand, is you create a back history whether they ever see it or not, but that helps create your emotional tics.
Absolutely.
Or physical tics, mm-hmm. or impulses or what have you, but people don't understand that is built.
You know, and all those things do, you know, come from what's already in the play. So so that's where the launching off point can come. Like,
right.
There's this section in Queen Mab when he talks about, you know, what a soldier's dreams might be like. And those are not pretty dreams. They start pretty, or at least they're not pretty, but they're, you know, they start, that dream that he talks about for a soldier starts out as something that seems kind of victorious and turns into something that's kind of nightmarish. And so you could argue that Mercutio is not a soldier, that he's just pretending that he knows what soldiers go through,
right.
Or he's just telling story. That's one way to treat that. Or what we decided to do was to fuel it with the idea that Mercutio had been talking about everyone but himself. And then when he arrives about talking about something that he's experienced personally, then that's when the switch flips and he gets a little lost in what he's saying. And that, so you get to see the kind of the dangerous side of Mercutio, so it makes a little more sense why he's deciding to take Tybalt on at the end of Act One for seemingly, you know, seems like he's just, sometimes he's just looking for a little danger. He's just looking for
action.
Yeah, anything to keep him occupied. And I think that's also, Romeo is not around a lot. So we start the scene with Romeo and then we go to this party and then all of a sudden he's not hanging out with us anymore. He almost didn't go to the party. And so it's just really important for Mercutio to make sure that Romeo is in his company, you know? And so you have to start asking those questions too. Why is he so obsessed with Romeo? What's going on? You know, you could argue that that's a device and Romeo's the lead character and it only works if, you know, he's the cool guy and we all want, where's Romeo?
Right.
You know, or you can ask, you know, you can take it a step further and go, why is he so obsessed about Romeo? Can't he just hang out with Benvolio for a day?
Yeah, what's up with that?
So, you know, there's a camaraderie there. There's an equality of wit between Romeo and Mercutio. You could argue that Mercutio is in love with Romeo. That's another argument you mm-hmm. can make. I think that Mercutio is probably pretty ambivalent sexually. I don't know if he's one way or another, as far as, I think it's all one big pool of opportunity for him. And that, you know, the day that he gets in it, into it with Tybalt is the day, is a day again where Romeo is off doing something else. And he's not sure where he is, but he knows that there's a challenge, or he has learned that there's a challenge against him. At one point we had played with the idea that, does he get into it with Tybalt to protect Romeo? But then that sort of takes away from the idea that Romeo could hold his own.
Right.
But Mercutio makes it pretty clear that he just doesn't like Tybalt. He just drives him. He just rubs him the wrong way. You know, everything about him just rubs him the wrong way.
You know, you got to have conflict.
Yeah.
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 So if you had to do the acting career all over again.
Yeah.
Would you do it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, there are times when I do web design as a day job if I'm out of business. Actually, I do web design while I'm doing shows sometimes, where I would be like, gosh, if I had gone into computers, you know, when I was a kid, there's a good chance I'd be a very wealthy man right now. But I don't know. I mean, I can't imagine doing anything else. I keep trying to. Yeah.
And being married and having two creative people in the house,
it's amazing. I mean, Melissa and I have such a bond over theater, over art, over anything artistic, music. And we often agree, and then we sometimes don't agree. And I think actually sometimes when we don't agree, it really makes us feel uncomfortable, because we are like, well, then if you don't see it that way, then how can I possibly be married to you?
Oh. So it doesn't happen that often.
No, not at all. But, you know, I mean that in a fun way. It's just that it's, and we do argue about and debate about those ideas, but we really do share a similar taste, and we are each other's biggest fans. I mean, she is an astonishing talent. You cannot take your eyes off her when she's on stage, and, you know, her shows that I have seen are so good and so beautiful and heartbreaking and so stamped with her sensibility that I saw her production of Spring Awakening at a college in Rochester, and I went back and saw it again because it was just so moving to me. And we worked together on a piece, both as actors, called Convenience, that was written by a guy named Greg Coffin. And then later in life on a piece called Right Next to Me, where she directed me and I was in it. So we've collaborated on new work together. And her production of The Fantastics here too, gosh, I bawled my eyes out. It was just stunning.
Some people would be like, there's no way I could have the same profession as my significant other, but yeah, you're making it work, and that's awesome.
Oh yeah. I mean,
let alone be directed by your spouse.
And I'm going to do it this fall. She's directing Spamalot at Jiva Theater Center, and I'm going to play Sir Robin in that for her. And we do pretty well. I mean, she's really good at what she does. I trust her. You know, she's coached me on auditions before, so it's not foreign for her to, you know, look at what I'm doing and assess what I'm doing and then help me get clearer and better. I don't see that as a power play. You know what I mean? If she starts barking orders about like what I'm supposed to be doing around the house or whatever, and on her schedule, that's different.
Yeah. Then we got a problem.
Now we got an issue. We're bringing on. Yeah. I know everybody else has to do what you say, but today I'm drinking coffee or whatever. You know, for a while it was really easy because we were both young, and then and we had mutual business connections, and then we went to New York and we were in one place for a while, and now it's, you know, we have to be really diligent about, you know, how do we keep connected, because if we're going out of town a lot, we got to make rules. You know, you can't go more than 4 weeks is what we're at now. It used to be 3 weeks, but it seemed more realistic to do four. And well, you know, that means if we hit week four, we got to like schedule a flight to see each other. And you know, because the longer you are physically away from each other, I really believe that it can be detrimental. And we knew that because there was a time in our life when we had to be away from each other. I think we were talking about this yesterday. It was almost, was it 2.5 months?
Ugh.
Or even 7 weeks? I don't know. It was somewhere in that range. It was too long. And we had, you know, it was something we had to like regroup and say, well, what's going on? Yeah.
It's like a Hollywood couple right here in Winona. Yeah, and you two are with each other this entire summer, which is
We are. Yeah, absolutely. And she's working on a new musical with Chris Mixon.
Okay,
called
great.
13 Tales. So they're putting together a reading of that. And then she's prepping two shows that she has coming up. The Spamalot production that I talked about at Jiva. And then for the Christmas slot, she's directing The Little Mermaid at Arkansas Repertory Theater. So she's got two really big shows ahead of her.
Oh, wow.
And 13 Tales is actually a pretty big cast, too. Or maybe not too big. But, yeah, so it's good. She stays busy, that's for sure.
Right. If people want to find out more information about you, where you're going to be doing...
Yeah.
Manager, where should they go? You got a website?
I do have a website. I try to keep it up to date, which is funny because I'm a web designer, but mine's, you know, pretty simple.
I know how
simple.
That goes.
But yeah, Jim, my name, you can actually just Google my name and I think it'll come up, but it's jimpoulos.com. I'm lucky in that when I was doing Rent, that was right when the internet was becoming a thing for fans. And so I actually had my domain and a site up.
Oh, you had it
down. As soon
as
1998. So I have such a history on the internet with that name that I just kind of come, you know, I have a good ranking or whatever they say. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I'm trying to start use Twitter more. Everybody seems to say that's where it's at.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I
think I'm too
Twitter.
Old to know.
No.
I'm using the Instagram, but I guess all the kids are using the Tumblr.
I don't know.
Tumblr's like a sea of I don't know for me.
I don't know. I don't even go on Tumblr. I have a Blogspot, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. yeah.
Well, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. This has been fun.
Excellent. Thanks again to Jim Poulos for visiting with us on Art Beat. More information on Jim can be found at jimpoulos, that's POULOS.com. If you're in Winona, check out the performances during Season 12 of the Great River Shakespeare Festival. More information on the festival can be found at www.grsf.org. I'm Terry Tensett, and you've been listening to Art Beat.
Art Beat is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. Visit us on the web at kqal.org.